Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary, here in the palatial upstairs third floor above the dining hall, where smells of mass-produced food are wafting into our nostrils and motivating us to parse verbs like crazy. We are reading through the letter of Paul to the Galatians, and we're in the third chapter. And thanks to Dr. Oswald, who held forth last week, and apparently we are at verse chapter 3, verse 16. Just to kind of review what's going on and get a little bit of the forest for the trees, I think you could describe what's going on at this point in Galatians is Paul is about to finish up, well, not quite finish up, but he's talking about what the law is not for, if I can say it that way. Interestingly, in verse 19, he'll take up the question of, well, okay, if the law isn't the means by which you stay in a covenant relationship with God, then what was it for? Then he'll take that up, and we'll get to there maybe today, but if not today, then next week. So in verse 15, Paul introduces this sort of illustration from human experience about a covenant which has been previously ratified. Once it's in place, he says, of course, anything's possible with human beings, but in general, you don't add something that comes later doesn't nullify what starts the deal. So that's his line of argument. So that gets us to verse 16, so we'll just pick up there. And Paul writes, To de Abraham, erethesan, hi epangelii, kai to spermate autu, ulege, kai tos spermazen, hos epi polon, al hos ef henas, kai to spermatesu, su, hos estin Christos. This is a great example of messianic exegesis, if I can say it that way. But just kind of reading there, the main verb in the first part of the verse is erethesan. As you might recognize, it's from Lego, of all things. It's the aorist passive indicative of Lego, third person plural. And the subject is the promises, right? Because you have the article, which is your friend. So Paul says, now the promises were spoken to Abraham. Again, the article on Abraham helps us to parse it, because like a lot of proper names, I don't think Abraham declines. I think it's always spelled the same, no matter what case it is. So the promises are spoken to Abraham and to his seed. And this is of some import that seed is singular, which Paul then emphasizes. So that's pretty easy, I think. Then ulege, it does not say. You know, you get this a lot in Greek authors where they have these little parenthetical, like as they say or it is said. You don't see it as much in the New Testament, but that's what's going on here. It does not say, Paul says, and two seeds, plural, tois spermazen. And now I actually had to look this up. This hos epi polon. The hos is easy enough, as, probably here, but the as you know, epi can take any one of the three oblique cases, genitive, dative, or accusative. And as you also know, it seems to be able to mean almost anything. Apparently, and I got this from Burton's great grammar, his commentary of almost 100 years ago now, that this is a common classical way of, it's kind of like a general reference with reference to, okay? And that makes good sense here in this context, and so the commentators go that way. So you translate as with reference to many. And Paul is working very hard with the fact that in the Septuagint, and then also, I think it's Zerah. Isn't Zerah the Hebrew word for seed? I think it's singular in both the Masoretic tradition and in the Septuagint. So, and to seeds, he does not say, or it does not say, and to seeds as with reference to many, but as with reference to one. Henas, of course, there is just the genitive singular of hen, the number one. And then Paul repeats, and to the seed of you. Now, this is, I think, of some importance. There's a variant reading, hos estin Christon. Excuse me, Christos. So the interesting thing here is that seed is neuter, right? And hos is masculine. And so Paul deliberately, I think, takes the masculine relative pronoun because he knows that Paul knows this probably more than anything else given the flow of salvation history. It probably would be hard to figure this out just by reading Genesis itself, right? But given the coming of Messiah as the seed of Abraham, Paul knows that this was sort of in God's mind all along, if we could say it that way. So, and to your seed, who is Christ? And so you probably should translate it that way, who is Christ, not which is Christ, just in English to get the masculine relative pronoun. And then the one little funky thing that we could mention, just for those that really care, Sue is the genitive singular masculine, well not masculine, but the second person pronoun is enclitic. It doesn't take an accent, which is why you have two accents on spermate. So, and I... If you can point that out to your board of elders sometime, they will give you a raise, and that'll be great. So grammatically, not too hard. Any thoughts or comments about verse 16? Okay, good. Now we get to my favorite hyperbaton in the New Testament. The hyperbaton is the space between the article and the noun that it governs. You know that. And so, like, you know, in German, you could say the sitting on the table New Testament, right? You just take the in New Testament and you cram modifiers in there. Of course, Greek can do this too. And I don't know how infinitely expandable the hyperbaton is, but we have a really good one here. So this is great fun. And if you point this out to your LWML sometime, they'll bake you cookies or something. So you got to parse, right? Verse 17. Tuta de lego diathekein pra kekiromenein hipatu theou ha meta tetrakazia kai triakanta ete gegonos namas uk a kiroi eis ta kat erges kat argesai tein evangelia. Now, a little rhetorical flourish at the beginning. Now this I am saying, right? Paul is going to clarify. And this sentence is a great example of pars or die, right? So diathekein, right away, is what case? What do you think? Diathekein.
It's
accusative, right? So you know right away that it's probably the direct object of something, right? So, and then we have a participle from pra kirao. Kirao means to ratify. We've had that before, and we're about to have it again. So to ratify in advance. And you can see the duplication. So it's a perfect participle, and then the menane ending will tell you it's either middle or passive, and always taken passive, I think, here. So what kind of a covenant? Having been ratified in advance and still in a ratified condition... And who did the ratifying? Well, Paul actually tells us here, hepatu theou by God, right? So a covenant which was previously ratified by God and is still ratified, right? And now we get the article ha, and you take a deep breath, and it goes all the way to namas. So seven words later, I think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 words later. So the law is the subject of the verb which immediately follows law, uk akiroi. This is from akirao, which means to unratify, right, or to nullify. And in between ha and namas, you have after 430 years coming or being. Gegonas is from what verb? Anybody? Gegonas? From ginomai. It's the perfect participle active of ginomai. So in English we'd say, the law which has come after 430 years. And there's the reference. The span is from the time in Egypt, right? And then between Abraham's day, in some sense Abraham's day, and the Sinai covenant. So that's the subject. That nine words is the subject. So, and then the verb, uk-a-ki-roi, it's a funny verb. It might, on a bad day, look to you like an optative because of the oi, but it's an omicron contract verb. And it's a combination of a in the stem and epsilon iota in the third singular. And that, believe it or not, that they're not as many, so it's hard to know those as well. It results in this contraction. It does not nullify. And then we have ace, ta, plus an infinitive, which is a fairly common construction in the New Testament and will often express purpose or result. And the infinitive there is from kat argeo. And so you can see that, again, that epsilon contract has lengthened the stem epsilon to eta, and you add the sigma of the weak aorist, and now you have an aorist infinitive active from katargeo, which means to nullify or render powerless or something like that. And then promise is the direct object of the infinitive. So you put all the pieces together. Now I am saying this, a law which has happened 430 years later, or after 430 years, does not nullify the covenant previously ratified by God in order to, or with the result that the, so as to invalidate the promise. Right? And again, it's interesting, Paul's argument here is historical. Right? Look, the promise came to Abraham first before Moses, before Sinai. And so you can't read Abraham through the later additions. You have to read the later additions through Abraham. That's what he's saying. Because the seed that connects back to the original promise is Christ. So it's a very interesting argument, and it's kind of a nice way. It reminds us to think of the Christian faith historically. You know, we're so far after the turning of the ages from the time of fulfillment or prophecy to the time of fulfillment that I think it's easy for us to actually forget. Maybe if we had a couple of real prophets every so often who could, kind of tell us what things mean in history, that might help us out. But that's not the kind of job you want to volunteer for.
So in that sentence, what was the subject again? Was it the law?
Yeah, it's the law.
The law.
And all the stuff that goes in between the and law.
And the, is it ha-nomos?
Mm-hmm, yep.
So the ha's all the way.
Okay. Yep, yeah. Cool. So everything from ha to nomos goes together, Dave. Isn't that great?
That's wonderful.
German is just like this. I don't know German very well, but it'll put whole clauses in between the article and the noun. So, which is why you have to take a deep breath. Kind of like singing O Kingly Love, if anybody knows this hymn. You have to breathe just right or you can never get through it. So. Okay, good. And now we have a conditional sentence in verse 18. That could be taken actually one of two ways, but we'll just read the verse in Greek first of all. So verse 18, Agar ek namu he kleronamea ugeti ex evangelias to de Abraham de evangelias kecharistai hatheas. So we start with our little friend if, and then the editors help us out with a comma, so that's all good, and there's no verb, of course. In fact, not only is there no verb in the if clause, or the protasis, as it's called, but there's no verb in the then clause, the apotasis. So you have to supply all kind of stuff. And the easiest thing, of course, is to supply a form of a linking verb. Literally, it's for if by the law the inheritance, no longer by faith or by promise. Right? So easy enough, you supply is in both clauses. But the question remains, actually, is this a, let's see, what Dr. Vels in his Fundamental Greek Grammar, following a whole strain of thought, calls, is this a present particular conditional sentence? That is to say, for if the inheritance is by the law, then it's no longer by promise. Or, there's another possibility, it could actually be a contrary to fact conditional sentence. Because sometimes the characteristic marker of a contrary to fact conditional sentence, oh, that's a good question, pop quiz. What's the characteristic marker of a contrary to fact conditional sentence? Anybody know? It's a little word on, in which clause? In the second clause, in the then clause, right? Because normally if you're going to have on, like eon or hus on, it'll be in the protasis, right? And but unfortunately, Greek doesn't always follow its own rules. And there are pretty clear examples of contrary to fact conditional sentences without an on, and it's just the context. If that's the case here, then you translate something like this. For if the law were, excuse me, if the inheritance were through a promise, then it would no longer be by a promise. Either one will work, I think, in the context. So I suppose maybe the first option is the way to go. And then Paul continues, and here's a good example of a debt that in context has to be translated, but, right? But to Abraham, through promise, or through a promise, God has freely given, and it remains in a given condition, or something like that. This verb is from charizomai, and you might have remembered that if you can have a perfect of a verb and the first consonant is the chi, it duplicates with a kappa, and so that's why you've got kappa epsilon there. And I think the verb is deponent, at least in the New Testament, and so this is a perfect indicative passive deponent, third singular. God has granted it to Abraham through a promise. So, in a sense, end of the argument for what the law is not for. It's not for justification. It's not for inclusion in the people of God. And it's not to add some sort of later condition to the promise, the unconditional promise to Abraham. So that's not what it's for. Which then brings up the question, okay, then what is the law for? And that's what Paul is addressing then in 3. It depends. It's debated, but 3:19, I think, to the end of the chapter. But that's a fairly complex question. And this is, I suppose, Greek club, not exegesis club. So, but at least we can get started on verse 19. So Paul says, Teun hanamas. Ton parabazeon charen pras etethe achrisu eilthe ta sperma ho ep engeltai diatages de angelon en cheri mezitu. Now, if you're a normal person, you have to look up a fair number of words here, right? Our little friend te is an interrogative pronoun. It parses out as the, it could be a couple of things, but it's probably your neuter singular, I guess it would be nominative, right? And it could translate either what or why. I guess if it translates why, it has to be accusative, neuter singular accusative. But it doesn't make any sense in the context to translate what is the law. And so, as typically, we'll translate it here, why. So why, therefore, the law? And I suppose you could say, why, therefore, was there a law, or why was the law given, or something like that. Presumably, the apostle is here giving God's intent, right? He's actually saying, this is what God intended. The verbs are passive, the pros etethe, but you have to presume that God is the one who did the action. So, now who can tell me what this is? A little pop question. Karim, third word in on the next clause. It looks like grace. It's actually not.
Joy.
No, it's neither one. It's an evil word. And before sin entered into the world, it behaved like every other preposition. But it doesn't now. It's one of the few prepositions that you'll see in the New Testament where what the item that it governs comes in front instead of back. It actually means on account of. It looks for all the world like the word grace, right? But actually, grace would go charis, charitas, charity. Is it? Well, actually, charin is the accusative singular, isn't it? Of grace. Yeah, it does. It looks exactly like the word grace. Right. But it's not. It's a preposition, and it governs the word in front, ton parabazaon, which is transgressions. So, why then the law? On account of transgressions. Pros etethe. This is from pros tithemi, which means to add. And it's the aorist indicative passive. So it was added, that is the law, on account of transgressions. And now we have achris, which is often paired with the relative pronoun who, and it goes together, and it just means until. And that's one of these things you look up until you remember it, right? So you don't even actually have to translate the who. So it was added until. And akris hu is normally followed by a subjunctive verb. So here, elthe is the aorist subjunctive of erkomai. Right? It was added until the seed came. And now our little friend ho is the relative pronoun, dative singular, neuter, to whom, this is from epangelo, which means to promise. It's you'd like to see a clearer duplication, but the duplication is actually in the eta. This is a perfect indicative passive. One of the keys here, by the way, is there's no connecting vowel. If you all are normal, seemingly normal people, so you probably wouldn't remember that the perfect middle passive fifth principal part verb forms have no connecting vowel. So the lambda, I got my alphabets mixed up there, and the tau together indicate that this is a perfect form, perfect passive. To whom it stood as promised, or to whom it was promised. Now we have a participle, diatages. This is from anybody? What is this, Stretch?
Diatasso.
Very good, diatasso. And the double sigma, when it acts like a guttural, which is, yeah, this is a weird form. This is actually aorist participle passive. Masculine singular nominative. And the referent is law. Right? Diatasso means to order or arrange. Being ordered through angels en chere by the hand of a mediator. A mesites is a mediator. So it's about time to stop. So picking up that whole verse, why then the law? Answer, and St. Paul, could you have explained this a little bit more? Right? Remember that he sent Titus or somebody with the letter to kind of explain things, right? It was added on account of transgressions until the seed would come, or until the seed to whom or to which it was promised came, after it had been established through angels by the hand of a mediator. And don't ask me any questions about the angels, because I don't know anything about the angels at this, the adding of the Sinai covenant. So, okay? Now the next verse is easy. Nobody knows what it means, but we'll save it for next week. So, right?
But grammatically, it's
grammatically, it's a piece of cake. Yeah. Okay, Greek club. With your Nestle all on. Or on it.